Pop Spotting 107.
Tuesday, August 16th, 2011.
Happy birthday, Alex.
I would name you the Hand of the King. You helped me win the Iron Throne. Now help me keep the damn thing.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's TV Tuesday.
And today we're tackling a show that's perhaps been long in coming. It was, in fact, mentioned by many, many of you, and in fact, a pick or a featured recommendation of not one, but two of our Thursday trivia guests. Yes, it is Game of Thrones on HBO.
It's based on George R.R. Martin's A Song of Fire and Ice fantasy book series.
That's right, and in fact, that's one thing I wanted to get out of the way right at the start. We can only speak at this point for what we see on the small screen, what HBO has done to Martin's story. So if you've read the books, if you knew where things were going, if you had a much more nuanced understanding of these characters, we apologize in advance.
Yes.
In fact, it kind of, you know, I think we're going to hear on Friday feedback to our Captain America review. Riled up some big fans of Marvel. So at this point, we just kind of want to give you the disclaimer right up front. So yes, Game of Thrones, created the TV series by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. Benioff at least has some well-known marks on his resume. He did Troy, and he did Brothers, a much more understated film that we enjoyed.
Yeah, we liked Brothers.
So some great talent and a significant budget and significant investment in all of the things that you need to make a great series, which certainly HBO is known for. But as many of our guests warned us up front, Game of Thrones is indeed a very complex, a widely sprawling universe that kind of takes some time to get a handle on. What I love about this series, getting into it right away, is the opening title sequence. It's perhaps one of the more interesting title sequences for a show, and it's because it's essentially a tour of a big map where you learn more about these seven kingdoms, and in fact, you kind of need that kind of as a grounding before you dive in and start to see the lives and the relationships of everybody that live here. But the show pretty much follows, or at least centers on, one of these families, and that's the Stark family.
Sean Bean plays Ned, who's the head of the family. He's married to Catelyn, who is played by Michelle Ferry, and they have several kids: Arya, Rob, Sansa, Bran, who I think they describe as a ward. I think he's an orphan that was taken in at some point. And Jon Snow, who is from a previous relationship of Ned's.
Previous relationship is one way to put it, played by Kit Harington. And when we meet the Starks, they're kind of living on the outskirts, the fringes of this world. They live in an area called Winterfell, which is
kind of like north. The Boonies.
Yeah. Sort of like they're in one of the flyover states of the Seven Kingdoms, but they get sucked into the greater, you know, political intrigue of this world because of the relationship with the King of the Seven Kingdoms, King Robert Baratheon. Now, King Robert used to be married to Ned Stark's sister, I think.
Right.
And so they're really close, but of course the king has a new wife now, Queen Cersei Lannister, and she is our introduction to what I would say is the counterpart, if not the bad guys, definitely the opposing side of the Stark family.
A bunch of sick puppies. Yeah.
Well, you have Cersei, and she has two brothers, Jaime and Tyrion. Jaime being the handsome one and Tyrion being the little dwarf one. And frankly, that's just a small part of what's happening on this side of the Narrow Sea. And then you cross the water and there's a whole other goings on with the massive army of the Dothraki.
The Dothraki really know how to party, but more importantly, they have a very powerful army, probably the most powerful army in this particular world that we know of. And so they are sought after by the Targaryen family, who want to use them to get their kingdom back.
Right. So the Targaryens, for lack of a better description, are kind of the pale blonde, you know, clan in this world.
The Malfoys.
The Malfoys. You've got the brother Viserys, played by Harry Lloyd, and his sister Daenerys, or Dany Targaryen, and she's played by Emilia Clarke. And the scenario on that side of the sea is that the brother marries off the sister to the leader of this warrior group because he wants their army. So the leader of this warrior group is played by Jason Momoa.
Local boy.
Local boy, Hawaii dude. And boy, is he a very big, burly, round. And
he's pretty.
He's a very pretty leader of the Dothraki. And he's Khal Drogo, perhaps my favorite name in all of this show. And boy, are these names hard to pronounce.
I just like to say Dothraki.
Yeah, Dothraki's
Dothraki.
Awesome.
Dothraki. Dothraki.
So that's a lot of setup already, and we haven't even begun to scratch the surface. But essentially, yes, yes, you've got the Starks pulled back to the seat of the kingdom to help, and then you've got this amassing army on the other side, and this brother and sister trying to use the army, and it just goes on from there. And I have to say, it was overwhelming at first. I think the first couple of episodes, we're constantly asking ourselves, so wait, who's that, and how are they related? I mean, you really kind of wanted a flowchart or a diagram of all these characters.
In a way, this show reminds me of The Sopranos, in that we're watching The Sopranos now, and I'm still not 100% sure about all of who all the people are and their relationships to everybody else. And it's kind of the same here. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around all the political and social implications of what we're seeing.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that. The creator, I think, sold it as The Sopranos in Middle Earth. I was thinking of The Wire as well, where you have close to 100 named characters that you, I mean, it's impossible in some ways to fully understand or appreciate where everybody is and who they're, you know, allied with and what's going on. But with all of these challenges, with this complex world, with this scheming, with what could be, you know, a daily soap opera that you could watch unfold over a period of 2 years, they still, I think, do a great job telling a story that you can still follow in these 10 episodes. I have to admit, I was sold pretty early on and I wanted to see the rest.
I kind of approached this show kind of the way Weeza talks about movies and Steel Magnolias. She says that she doesn't go to movies anymore because there's a bunch of naked people in them. I felt the same way because there is a lot of nudity and there is a lot of shocking violence, and it took me a little while to get used to it and to accept it as part of the story.
Well, you know, it's funny, when we talked to our guests who recommended Game of Thrones, that's the only thing that I could remember from conversations about it. Oh yeah, there's a lot of naked people. I couldn't stop saying that, and I gotta say it, you know, it is distracting in the sense that to me it's like, well, their HBO goes again doing what they can do and nobody else can do because they're premium cable, so of course there's going to be a lot of gore and blood and knives, and of course there's going to be a lot of boobies. I did laugh when and you actually said, how come, what is it with only the women getting naked? I mean, that's not fair. And then, like, for the next two episodes, there was full frontal male nudity. So maybe they were listening to you at that point. But despite all of that, again, this show feels like a film.
It does,
They don't spare any budget, as far as I can tell. I didn't see any seams. I didn't see any matte paintings so much. Even the effects, what little of them there are, is spectacular. But the sets, the costumes, in particular, they feel like this is a real universe. It's hard to believe you're not watching a medieval show set in Earth's history and that this is another world. This is, in fact, a post-dragon, but still a very, you know, magical and unreal fantasy universe, but still feels real enough that you think you could actually visit it.
It's shot on location in Northern Ireland, which is just very beautiful and lush, and the way they use the location is breathtaking. I think it's probably one of the most gorgeous shows on TV. And like I mentioned, when we did our Gladiator show, there's something about medieval imagery in movies that's just breathtaking. It's very exciting. And I believe, like, the costume design and the sets together just make it very real.
What I like about it too is, again, you have all of these families, you have these seven kingdoms, you have basically very distinct regions, very distinct relationships and empires that are built, and they distinguish themselves well. So there are just enough differences in either the lighting and where they're set, in how people are dressed, that you don't necessarily need the thing to appear on screen to say, oh, we are in Winterfell now, we're at King's Landing now, we're across the sea now, we're at the Wall now. They're so different that as you start to watch the show, you know where you are. I mean, there's enough nuance. You know, they might all be set in the same universe, but there is enough difference, and it is done on screen so well that you really start to feel your way around and understand where you are. That said, so great. You've got wonderful costumes. You've got great sets, decent effects. You've got beautiful cinematography and a wonderful location. You have a novel at its base, which goes on for several books, so certainly no end to how complex this universe can be and how wide this world can be, but it's a TV series. You've got 10 episodes, and the only way it's going to succeed is if it can not just tell a good story, but if the characters are compelling, and if the performances are good. And I am happy to say that despite all of that setup and everything we've said leading up to this, what really made me fall for Game of Thrones, what everybody said was true, is that while the story is complex, while the world is complicated, it is the true humanity, it is the power of the performances and these characters that really set Game of Thrones apart.
I agree. I think they are all wonderful, but Peter Dinklage really stands yes. out for me as Tyrion, who is the queen's brother. He displays so much pain and so much rage, but he's so funny and so sharp, and he definitely gives the performance in this show that runs away with it.
Well, Dinklage is also already the only nominee. There were several Emmy nominations for this show, but Dinklage was the one that was up for Best Supporting Actor. I agree that he can't appear in every scene because he would steal every scene. He really comes off initially as perhaps what you would think is to be the comedic relief, but there's so much more to him. And yes, later on in the series, as you get to understand him more, he really is a compelling, dramatic, tragic character as well. You know, he's not just funny and witty and has the right thing to say at every time, which I gotta admit is a lot of fun, but you begin to really feel for him, and despite his size, you feel, you know, you are in his shoes.
There's a scene where he tells his story. He talks about a relationship that he had with a woman and how that worked out, and the camera is on his face the whole time. And that scene, that close-up, haunts me. It's one of the scenes that I remember most when I think about this show.
And that's saying something. I mean, because there are some really spectacular scenes, some really mind-blowing scenes, some great set pieces and wide shots and triumphant moments that are definitely awesome. But if it's just as powerful is a close-up on a guy's face. So, you know, that human side is really what sucks you in. And since we're on the subject of sort of the bad guys, and, you know, Tyrion is great, But I'm not saying that bad characters are necessarily better or that these actors are better, but they're so compelling. The next ones that come to mind on my short list have to, again, be that Lannister family. Now, you've got the brother, Jaime, the blonde, handsome prince sort of character who's great but creepy and weird.
Do you know
and
who
so
he
sharp.
Reminds me of? Hmm? He reminds me of Prince Charming in Shrek 2, you know, fairy godmother son.
I can see that. There's a little bit of that going on. And so he's enjoyable, but really a standout performance by the sister, by the queen married to King Robert, the queen who's really against the Stark family, Cersei Lannister, played by Lena Headey. She is so good at being bad. I can't remember another character in recent memory that I've been more personally and viscerally angry at or shocked at in terms of just how far she's willing to go. I mean, she's great. She's just great.
I think she goes a little bit over the top. I mean, it's really? It's okay because a lot of the show goes a little over the top, but there are times where she's just so evil, it feels like a Disney movie.
I can see that, kind of like the wicked stepmother sort of sneer that she might have going on. But again, I think she's great.
I think the series is a much better bad guy because he's so sniveling and so spoiled and so entitled that to me, he makes a much more convincing bad guy.
The series, the Draco Malfoy of the show, right? For sure. Well, since we've crossed the river in terms and another fantastic female performance, and I think the character in the show that evolves the most, that changes the most clearly and critically from episode 1 to episode 10, has to again be that sister married off to the leader of the Dothraki, Dany, played by Emilia Clarke. She, you know, when you meet her for the first time, she is sort of the hapless girl being married off to the scary warrior dude, and I didn't think that there was going to be too much to her, but they did a fantastic job in developing her into something completely different.
She evolved, and so did her relationship with Khal Drogo. It's purely a business arrangement at first, but she learns a lot and she gains a lot of knowledge, and in the end you realize that she and Khal Drogo have fallen in love, and I really enjoyed seeing that evolution.
Absolutely. The relationship, you know, from being almost abusive and uncomfortable and awkward to genuinely passionate and committed, and really for Emilia Clarke from episode 1, kind of the big doe-eyed innocent toward where she is at the end, just ready to completely knock some heads, and you know, she goes through this ritual with a heart, and just I it's fantastic.
Oh, the heart
what
scene
they do.
That is a shocking horrible, terrible scene to watch.
Well, that's what you said. You know, the Dothraki know how to party. I totally agree with that. Well, with all of this focus on the bad guys, I do think we should spend a little more time with the Stark family, who are, again, at the heart of the show. I mean, maybe that's kind of a weakness that they have to be the good guys. I think Sean Bean does a pretty good job. I mean, he does. He is the leader of the family. He is the guy in the whole first season who's trying to always do the right thing. And then, you know, it's a strong performance for sure.
He's a complete badass, Ned. I think Ned is a very strong and very tough character, but Sean Bean really sells that. I think Sean Bean is probably just a really tough guy, and I think that really comes through in the character of Ned.
Well, that's funny that you say that. I mean, yeah, he's a tough guy, but I really saw him more as kind of a noble character. So that balance, that mix that he's able to do, certainly is worthy of mention. I like his wife, Caitlin, played by Michelle Fairley. She's fantastic. She in a way, you know, when the men are away, who's actually running the house? Even in fact, when the men are home, it's got to be the wives. And I think she's a great strong female character.
Oh yeah.
As well.
Ned thinks he's in charge, but I think it's Kat who's really in charge.
So we did mention that they've got kids, some biologically, some one adopted, one from a previous relationship. There's another word for that. Jon Snow. I think of them, I really like Kit Harington's performance as Jon Snow. I mean, he's really in a tough place. He's not really part of the family, but he really wants to be a part of the family. And I think he goes the furthest to prove, you know, his worth as a man.
Yeah, I agree. His performance is really good. I really enjoy Maisie Williams as Arya. She's the youngest daughter.
Oh yeah, she's actually, I think, my secret favorite character, the young girl in the show. I mean, she's a tomboy, she's feisty, but you know, if there was a way to kind of follow one character's experience in this world from start to end, I really think that Arya is kind of the perspective that I'd like to follow the most. She's fantastic. You've got the older daughter, Sansa, played by Sophie Turner, and because of the way that politics works here, she basically gets promised to marry the son of the evil queen. She gets married, gets promised to the young Prince Joffrey, played by Jack Gleason. But Sophie Turner does good in the sense that I get mad at her too, really a lot, and I think because she's playing a very good teenage daughter.
You hate Julie Taylor, but I really don't like Sansa. I think she's the ultimate spoiled brat teenage girl.
Well, and in this world, you know, I mean, Julie Taylor on Friday Night Lights, you know, she might not get to get the car or go to the prom. I think here, when Sansa makes some of the choices that she makes, she puts lives at risk. So yes, I would say that she's a much more difficult to deal with teenage daughter. So in that respect, mad props to Sophie Turner for doing a great job. I mean, this show asks quite a bit of its young actors. And I mentioned Prince Joffrey. You know, he is sort of a cartoonish, sort of feisty, bratty little prince for most of the show. But it is in fact a decision that he makes in the 8th episode, right toward the end of the first season, that turns the whole series, the whole season on its head, and really reveals him to be capable of much more evil than we thought he was.
Even more so than his mother.
Right, and so I gotta ask you, I mean, for those who read the book, perhaps they knew what to expect, but for most people just watching the series, including us, I mean, I certainly remember the massive Twitter and Facebook outcry when episode 8 wrapped. So how did you like that ending and where it left us for episode 9?
I thought it was very gutsy. It's not something that a lot of TV shows do these days. But what I liked about it was that it changed the entire dynamic of Ned's family. It changed the relationships that his family had with each other and the relationships that they had with other people. And it ended up completely changing not only his family, but other characters as well.
Absolutely. In fact, even his own family, I think, even the prince's own family, the Lannisters, these evil Lannisters who've been scheming to gain power, to get an upper hand on the Stark family. I think when they finally saw what the natural end result of all of the things that they'd put into motion was, they perhaps were even shocked. They perhaps were, I think, having second thoughts. You know, when you get what you ask for, sometimes it's not actually what you wanted. I really thought that the show did a fantastic job, as you said, of showing the impact on families, on individual people of the human experience. Even though this event is also a big event in these kingdoms, it sets them on edge. It puts wars, you know, sets them off, and people battling in fields. Certainly the fantasy nut in me, the former Dungeons & Dragons DM in me, really appreciates that this show goes into battlefield strategy and armies amassing, and are they moving here and moving there, and sacrifices to gain the upper hand. That's great. But again, that we spent the amount of time that we did just seeing what was happening with the families, even when these bigger things were happening, is really, I think, the genius of this show. And finally, episode 10, you know, I really think that the season one could have obviously ended with what we saw at
easily,
the end of episode 9.
Easily, but the end of episode 10 left me breathless.
Absolutely. It was fantastic, a triumphant moment after everything that we had just seen and been through. I mean, certainly it is still very bleak and very worrisome where everything is going to pick up, where all of these families and all these people we know, how they're going to possibly pull their lives together and get back on their feet. But that final scene, actually, I think that final scene and the very first scene of this first season of Game of Thrones are great bookends, because throughout this entire first season, we've been getting hints and suggestions that while we've been following the politics and machinations of these men, these humans, these families, these kingdoms, we also know that there's something much bigger going on. You know, winter is coming, the Great Wall. There are forces that would make what these people are worried about seem so small. I mean, they're fighting over an anthill. They're ants in an anthill, and yet a giant can come and squash them at any time. And so that final scene really sets the stage for, you might still want to know what's going to happen to the Stark family, but you might really want to worry what's going to happen to all of these humans in this world.
Oh, I'm just anticipating all kinds of crazy stuff. I can't wait to see what they come up with. And that's what's going to make me tune into season 2, is all of this stuff coming to light. And it is the characters that make me interested in the show, but I really want to see all of these things that they're hinting at.
Absolutely. We can't wait for them to pull back that lens and show us more of this world. Of course, there's a lot more to this world. The book series, the fifth book in this series, came out in July, and there are at least two more books coming, and we've only now seen the first book depicted on screen. We don't know if the show is going to last as long as the book series, or if in fact it's going to kind of catch up with what the books have shown us, and maybe the show creators are going to have to come up with something else. But I have to admit, I think it's pretty clear, just like many of our listeners, we are sold on Game of Thrones.
I know I am.
Absolutely. In fact, the hardest part about this show is that we have to wait until next year to see season 2. But all of America is certainly sold on Game of Thrones. I did love that it premiered to 2.2 million viewers 2 days later after that very first episode. It got renewed for the second episode, and yet the viewership actually grew to be 3 million when that finale aired. The show got 13 Emmy Award nominations, including for outstanding drama and for casting, as well as, that we had mentioned, for Peter Dinklage. So a lot of love. It's just, you know, we would say to check it out, but it's hard to check out now that it's aired. And if you didn't have HBO, that was kind of our challenge as well. You might have to resort to alternative means. You can pre-order the DVD on Amazon right now. It's already number 7 in DVDs for fantasy, for example, but they don't even have a release date. I cannot wait to get my hands on that. In fact, the special features for that Game of Thrones DVD are probably going to be spectacular. Now, if you're having trouble keeping up with our show, if iTunes is slowing you down, you can now hear our show on demand with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher has news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no storage wasted.
It's available for you on any of your newfangled smartphone things. It's available for iPhone, Android phones, webOS phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Now, if you love Game of Thrones, if there's a performance or actor that you think we completely failed to acknowledge, we want to hear from you. Feedback is what keeps us going. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Game of Thrones or any other topic we cover here on Pop Spotting.
Leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net, drop us a line at feedback@popspotting.net, or leave a voicemail at 815 315 310-0808.
You've got a thought about anything, you can post it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/popspotting, and other listeners can join the conversation there, or you can engage us in conversation on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
Be back tomorrow for another flashback music segment.
Thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and of course, mahalo to you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Aloha.